Publishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow Legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, Old Man Dayton.
You know, there's a moment in a lot of dead letters where there's fear, but then it turns into something stranger, which is familiarity. Like you stop bracing every time you pass that thing on the stairs, and maybe you just start nodding at it on your way to the kitchen.
It's a lot like renovating a house. You got strangers hanging around so much, you're starting to have breakfast with them. The roommates you never agreed to. And at some point, you quit telling people that something strange is happening because the people you tell just decide something's wrong with you.
Yeah, that's a very specific frame of mind and feeling to be in where you feel like maybe you're alone. Maybe you're just the only one imagining all this, especially when people tell you that, you know, and that happens a lot in these letters where the writer, the author, spends half of the story being told it's just their imagination, even by the people they trust the most. But here's the tell, you could say, that always gets our attention. When people give the thing a name, so there's a familiarity and a connection there. And we've talked about this before, like, how do you settle on a name? Well, sometimes I think a lot of it from people who've told me directly, it's just something you feel.
Yeah.
And you only name something that is going to stick around for a while.
That's right.
People don't name their farm animals. So, but it means, you know, a name is given to something that you have some connection or familiarity with, as we said, or an affection for, because it stayed around long enough to become part of the family or just the household furniture.
Yeah. And as we often say, it seems like a high number of times when people name the things they're interacting with, paranormal specifically, and they do a little research later, more often than not, you can find a historical connection to someone who actually lived and died there. Now, in this story, the road itself was the likely inspiration. But here's the part that got me with this one. What happens when the next family moves in? People who never met you, never heard a single word of what you experienced, and then they've already got a name for it too.
Right. And imagine a stranger turning up years later to your same house. You know, they're living in the same place. You go to visit them. There's always that moment of nostalgia, but also you're looking for some connection, some verification, some confirmation. And when they start using the same name for whatever it is they're seeing, then you know something's real about it.
That's right. And this week's letter is exactly that house, one building. And the oldest part of it is genuinely old, with a run of families who never crossed paths, separated by years, who each got introduced to the same two former residents. There's a little boy, and there's an old man, and which of them you meet seems to come down to who you are.
And three families in that house across the years in this case. Two of them saw the same old man with their own eyes, and before either of them, a psychic had already described him to the family living there first, to their knowledge. And our listener, Heather, didn't piece it together until she was standing in a doorway years later, asking a total stranger a question she wasn't sure she wanted answered. So that's one of the ideas we're going to be talking about tonight, whether this is something a couple of families and a psychic who gave a reading about the home, you know, talked themselves into, or, you know, was part of their collective imagining perhaps, or was someone still genuinely home? All right, Scott, my friend, it is your turn.
I grew up in a single-family home, and part of it was very old. The first time I saw the spirit or ghost was a time the family was doing outside work, and I looked at the house and I thought I saw my little brother sitting on the stairs looking out the window.
Annoyed that he was inside and not helping, I went in to get him. When I got into the house, no one was there. And from the staircase where I thought I saw my brother, I could clearly see him in the back area of the property. There was no way he could have been inside and then gotten out back there without me passing him. I told my dad this story, but he thought I was imagining things. Then one night, a few months later, I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought I saw my little brother again. He seemed to turn and go into the bathroom. I was annoyed he was using our bathroom, and when I didn't hear a flush, I went to yell at him for not flushing. Again, I got up, went into the bathroom, and no one was there. And I never saw anyone leave, so was I seeing the same little boy ghost? Again, I told my dad, and he said it was my imagination. Then one time we were playing hide-and-go-seek, and my sister swore she saw our brother under the table, only to lift the tablecloth and find no one. Now two of us have seen the little boy. Again, no one believed us. Then one night my stepmom was sitting in the office and saw an old man in our house, so vividly that she could describe what he was wearing and 100% thought we had an intruder. She screamed for my dad, who went looking for him, but no one was ever found. After that, strange things would happen, and as time went on, we all became believers. After a few years of living there, someone who used to live in the house stopped by to revisit her home. My dad asked her about the history of the house and walked through with her as she explained what it was like when she lived there, and then she asked if we'd seen anything or if anything had happened. We told her our experiences, and she said while they lived there, her parents had a reader come in and said there was an old man and two children that lived in the old part of our house. Now, all the years we lived there, we only ever saw the little boy and the old man. Fast forward, we sell and someone new moves in, and I noticed an open house sign a few months later when I drove by, and I thought that was odd. So I stopped in and told them I had lived there and was curious why they were moving so soon. She explained her husband got relocated for work, and I said, okay, and thought that was it. And then she asked me, why do you ask? I simply said, I just wondered if it's because weird things happen here. And she responded with, are you talking about old man Dayton? I was shocked she brought up the old man and responded with, you named him? And started talking. Dayton Road was the name of the road the house was on, and she saw him so often she felt it best to name him. I explained our experiences and the story I knew from the older lady that stopped in while we lived there, and she said, we have only ever seen the old man, but one night before I found out I was pregnant, I did think I saw a little boy, but I'd just woken up and couldn't tell if it was real or not, and I've not seen him since. We discussed the timing of the little boy and the differences of who had seen him. Always us kids, like me and my sister, while old man Dayton, as we all now refer to him, always seems to appear to the adults. But this is one house. Three families with experiences without knowing each other or our stories until after they'd all had their own encounter.
The veil between the living and the dead is thinner than this commercial break.
You're at the beach with your family right now, right?
That I am.
Okay, so when you go down to go swimming or watch your son surf, do you wear a transparent swimsuit?
I most certainly do not. I feel pretty sure I would be arrested in short order if I showed
well,
up in a trailer.
I'll bet you would. You know, folks, listen, there are things in life that you don't want to be transparent, like your swimsuit.
Or your search history.
Exactly.
But transparent is exactly what Mint Mobile believes your wireless bill should be. No gimmicks and no gotchas. Just high-speed data and reliable coverage on the T-Mobile 5G network.
And right now, all plans are $15 per month, even unlimited. Because unlike transparent swimsuits, transparency in your wireless bill is the first thing you want. Mint Mobile took what's wrong with wireless and made it right with premium wireless for $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
And you can even bring your current phone and your number, so there's nothing new to figure out.
Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly bill. And after the week we just spent with old man Dayton, a phone bill with no surprises in it sounds downright peaceful.
Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile. It's so easy. Sign up online and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/DLO. That's mintmobile.com. mintmobile.com/DLO.
Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/DLO. That's it. There's no catch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months. Plan required. $15 per month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only.
Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to a 20 gigabyte hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com.
Let's get back to unraveling this dead letter.
Well, I love that story because, one, it genuinely wasn't that terrifying. And also, we're talking about familiarity here is one of the themes of this story and our discussion, and that you live with something so long that you just kind of come to accept it, even though, you know, the patriarch, your father, who tells you everything that's right and wrong in the world, says it's just your imagination. I think because they didn't have their own experience, the father had not yet, or he's right. Doing the parental thing of like, well, I don't want to scare the kids. I'm not going to say like, yeah, that's old man Dayton. He's a ghost and he sees you going to the bathroom. You don't want to upset your kids. And so you just kind of say, well, don't worry about it. I think you might be just seeing things. But then when it happens so often, there's a point where that becomes a disservice. And even I think as a child, you might start to question that trust in your parents. It's like, well, if you're not going to believe me, who is?
Also, this story has that element too with her seeing what she thought was her little brother. It's like, why is he loafing around in the house? We're out here doing work. And then she goes in the house. He's not there. And on top of that, you can see him out in the backyard, which is something we've come across before. You know, people seeing people inside the house. And also it's like some kind of doppelganger maybe, or you think it's a member of your family. Yeah. And then it turns out that that's different. So then, you know, that begs the question, what is it, if you believe any of this at all? That begs the question, you know, did you see an echo of your own life or your own brother's life or some capturing of that? Or did you see something else that you just mistook for the most familiar thing that's that shape and size, your little brother or whatever?
Yeah, that's the exact question that was running through my mind when I first read this story, and it started to gel some ideas and remind me of stuff, as it usually does. But the first part being, is this a doppelganger? You know, with the little brother. And so now that we've had a fair number of doppelganger experiences told to us by our listeners, and just all very bizarre, it's a little bit different in that. And so what I would say, maybe what's going on here is that, you know, as we all know, as we start to delve more into consciousness studies, that's a lot of the internet in this paranormal realm is all about consciousness. And it's going to be a huge part of any kind of disclosure, is that you are the disclosure. It is your consciousness. And what the brain does, though, when it encounters something that is otherworldly and outside of your realm of any possible rational experience, your brain fills in the gaps. And so when you see something like, at first, it's not spooky. And I'll counter with something that shouldn't happen normally. I've told the story before, but it's one of my favorite little anecdotes by our good friend, Tara Jane, who Natalie and Tara Try Stuff. That's their YouTube channel, hugely popular. And I was having just a casual conversation about, you know, have you seen anything weird? And so her family grew up in a suburban house in Texas. And what I love is that I think this might have been her high school years, in the family took a vacation. So her boyfriend at the time agreed to house sit. And, you know, so it's doing stuff inside the house, just making sure everything's fine. Also, a little, you know, some stuff out in the backyard, but nobody's in the house, obviously.
Right.
So he was out in the backyard. And again, these are all classic feelings and tropes, which some folks might say like, oh, there you go. They're just making up a ghost story they've read on Creepypasta or whatever. And I would, no, that might be the case for a lot of it. But I also see that as having some kind of confirmation element in that, okay, there's patterns here that we see and that we've heard from people we really trust. And so the first thing is that he's got his back turned to the house. He's out in the backyard cleaning up something or checking on something. And he feels like he's being watched. And it's that weird feeling that can't really say I've experienced fully. Mm-hmm. I've, as part of situational awareness, which I've always tried to maintain, even when young, it's that you're paying attention to stuff. And I'm just wondering if somebody's watching. I don't get that feeling, but he did. And so he kind of gets up, he turns around, and he sees one of the windows at the backside of the house, and they had Venetian blinds, and he sees the blind go down as if someone had lifted up the blind and was looking out at him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, and, thank you on that one.
Well, the slat drops, and he knows there's nobody in the house. And that's the moment he's like, nope, okay, I will do what I had to do, but I'm not doing this again. Because, like I said, it's a very simple, small thing, but that's the viewer from the house. And that's such a, again, such a trope. Also, Sally House, take two shots, where somebody sees somebody in the upper window looking down at them. And one of the best ghost photos I've seen, or one of my favorites, is a silhouette of a human figure in the upstairs window. And what I like about it is that we know people we trust, that are friends, who have a metaphysical ability to see things, objects, people, spirit in photos. And there's a way that that can be trained. I don't have that, but I, looking at that photo, I get the sense of a man, a young man, kind of slender. But what's weird about it is that I sensed a real like 1920s haircut, like that kind of slick back comb,
right.
You know, Vitalis, the hair gel or whatever it is, the hair grease.
Just,
you don't really see that in detail, but like, I just get a sense of that. And maybe that's my brain filling in the blanks. But obviously you can see a silhouette there. Yeah. It's very clear.
Well, I mean, you can't discount pareidolia. I mean, people talk about it a lot, but you have, like, if we see as a human being, if we see anything even remotely looks like a face or a head, we think we're seeing, which is, I think, a fight or flight thing. Like, is this a threat to me? It goes back to caveman times or whatever.
But, right. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here, is that there is some element of the experience or the interaction where the spirit is inside the place where they are somewhat trapped or want to be, looking outside to the outside world and obviously seeing something. You know, it's like, take the spirit at Tara's house. It's like, it knew that fellow, that nice young man who was, you know, helping clean up the house. He's outside now and I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
And so it gives me the sense that they
can
see.
That's a friend of ours, for folks that don't know.
Tara Jane, again, she's got her podcast with Natalie, Natalie and Tara Try Stuff on YouTube. And it's just a very simple, small, quick kind of thing, but it says a lot. It's like whatever was there. And of course, she had a lot of other strange experiences that also remind me of this story here in that house before they moved. And that's just one where, like, I guess you saw whatever we continue to see. But it's also, spirit is also seeing. And I wonder what their perspective is like. Does the little boy see the old man there? Or are they ships passing in the night who don't even know they're the other one's there? Or do they interact?
And this is what's interesting. I mean, so you got the children seeing the children and then the adults seeing the old man,
right?
Which is, that's another component of this that's fascinating. It's like, what's revealing itself to what? Then we get into that whole thing of like, how much of this is in your head or how much is being controlled, what your senses are perceiving.
Right.
But what's fascinating here is you have the firsthand account from Heather's stepmother. That's a firsthand. And then the new owner is of the home, also a firsthand account.
Yeah.
And then you had the prior family's psychic reader, which that's, you know, that's secondhand information, but supposedly predates both of those two experiences. But those are three independent people with no contact across a lot of decades. Now, it's plausible that there's this local story, or maybe people talk about, you know, old man Dayton and who, you know, who the road's named for somebody more than likely. Of course, it could be a random historical figure, like some guy that established the county or whatever. It could have been that old man Dayton lived on that road, or just this idea that people are like, no, that's old man Dayton, or we just need to label this thing that we're seeing over and over. But then when you come down to seeing the children too, and this is something, again, coming back to the Sally House, one of the things that we learned about that and was that it felt like, and, you know, it lines up with Poltergeist, the movie, the original one, anyway. I haven't seen the remake. But just this idea that there's once the portal gets opened, there's a lot of things hanging out there. And sometimes there's something in charge or controlling the other things. I mean, this Stranger Things was about this too. There's like this bigger, and that's interesting to me, like from a fictional standpoint, in terms of horror movies and, you know, as you say, tropes and all of that kind of stuff. There does seem to be this idea that humanity has that when there is a rip or an opening in the veil from this side to the next, it seems to draw the attention from both sides. And on the other side, the things that are drawn to it may have more or less power or be kind of organizational in a way or have control over the other things ways that we don't understand, which is what's, you know, another thing that's interesting to me about this story, about the kids seeing the kids and the adults seeing the old man.
Well, there's a binding, certainly. I've heard that before and I tend to believe it. But my original point here is that when she looks towards the window and sees the little boy, part of that is the brain filling in the gaps, because what's the most logical thing? You know, most of us don't jump to ghost. Okay. So again, not knowing the history of the house and the previous family's experiences, you don't naturally think like, oh, there's a little boy ghost in there. You think it's your little brother because it's close enough. So the brain says, well, it's gotta be it. In that split second decision, it's like, that's gotta be who that is. And then when that happens a few times and there's a case in the bathroom, and then the sister also sees a little boy, they think, hiding under the table. And you get a better look at it and you realize, okay, now this is the other. This is something else. This is not our brother. And then your mind has to contend with that, like, because it needs reconciliation. You just can't leave that dangling out there. And that's what we're kind of talking
about
in our
open. Why is the thing never there, though? When you pull up the tablecloth, it's gone. Why is it you go in the house, it's gone?
Sometimes
why
it's
is the
not.
Thing never there?
Well, that's why I like the few stories.
That's when it's scary, though. You pull up the tablecloth and you're right there a couple feet away from something like that that's ethereal and shouldn't be there. Why isn't that happening more often? You know, it goes back to, you know, we haven't talked about your rules in a long time.
Yeah.
But to me, this feels like a rule. Like, why is it if you see the thing from a distance or you see it out the corner of your eye or you see what, of course, you know, skeptics will be like, because it's not really there anyway. You're imagining it, but if... But let's just say, let's get past that, because it gets boring, especially after, dozen years doing this. We've stopped asking the do we believe and more like, let's pretend at least this really happened. Mm-hmm. What is it? And what are the rules of engagement?
Well, expanding upon the rules with maybe an addendum, I've come to realize or just entertain more the idea that, and this, again, when you look at your little brother and he's not there and it couldn't possibly have been him, then your brain has to look for other answers to go on living peacefully in your own mind. Then you start expanding, like, okay, what was it? And I think, you know, the natural thing is, at least, you know, when we started, when you're young, and I think a lot of people also who don't want to think about this too much or just don't care about it, things are very simple. It's like UFOs, okay? It's just like, oh, well, they come from a planet. We don't know where that is. Alpha Centauri, it's 4 light years away. That's the most logical choice, right? Because they're getting here in a craft, and they're other beings, and they're little green men or little grays or whatever they are, and they're physical in a nuts and bolts craft. They made themselves, and they just figured out how to have light speed warp drive, you know? So that's the most logical thing we can wrap our heads around. Well, they're just real people. They come from somewhere else. And now,
which makes the least sense because everything is too far away for that to even work.
Well, that's going from what we know. This has always been my point about the Fermi paradox. It's like, okay, so they're using the same technology we are, just maybe better, a little bit more advanced. It's like, no, that's in the box thinking. So then you start expanding. And over the years, as we learn more about this, you start to think like, oh, well, first of all, maybe they have figured out faster than light travel. Okay, because that's always the big stopping block is that the stumbling block.
But things
block,
are still too far away, even with that.
Well, here's the thing. We don't know. It's just like, okay, you can now there's theoretical possibilities that you can fold space and that there's interdimensional travels. There's the Einstein-Rosen bridge. There's wormholes. There's all these other
time.
These other ideas where you don't need a rocket like we do. Okay, so stop thinking that way. Start expanding your thinking. And my point is that you start to wonder about interdimensional beings and things that are already here. They're just on another frequency that you don't see. Or there's the ultra-terrestrials where they're ancient beings and they live also perhaps in another frequency or just another space that is within this Earth, that they've just been here before us or as long as us. And they just occupy the same space, but you normally can't see them. And when that happens...
Line from, The Great Gatsby.
Oh.
I was within and without.
Yeah, there you go.
Genius. I love it.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you expand your thinking. And then you start to wonder about the stories where you are seeing something which people might classify like, oh, it's just, okay, I believe you, but I think it was a ghost. Like everything's a ghost. And yeah. that's the problem with like infrasound. It's just like, oh, well, all that's just being caused by infrasound. And what people are seeing are gray blobs. Well, that's very limited. Like, not all ghosts are gray blobs, you know, and not everything yeah. that everybody's seeing that they think they're imagining is a gray blob. Okay. It's much more varied. My point is the one story we heard years ago on Halloween where our storyteller, she woke up and sees this reptilian, like a Gorn from Star Trek. Yes. And it's got this wide
from
grin.
Vasquez Rocks.
Yeah. And yeah. It is, right. And he's Vasquez Rocks, just north of L.A. And then she's like, okay, that's weird. In my half sleep, I'm just going to kind of turn over and I'm not going to look at it. And I don't think she pulled the covers over, but she just kind of rolled over, turned her, closed her eyes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, when I wake up, as to your earlier point here, is that when I open my eyes again, it should be gone, because that's the way it always goes, right? You look under the table, yeah. it's gone. You open the door of the closet, it's gone, whatever it is. And she opens her eyes again, and now it's a foot away from her. With this
yeah,
big grin
right.
of like,
yeah.
you thought I'd leave, didn't you? Well, I haven't.
Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah.
And it's this big reptilian thing. So my point is, let's take the presumption that the being is real. And somehow right. it just manifested itself in her bedroom. Again, another motif, leitmotif or trope. It always goes to your bedroom around sleepy time. And it's just there. And then it didn't disappear. And she wakes up and is now a foot away from her. And thankfully, I think she did that again. It finally left. But is that a ghost or is that an interdimensional being? And now there's all this talk of reptilian aliens and that kind of strain and genre mm-hmm. that they're just around and they're physical, but they have this other ability to, in kind of like an ultra-terrestrial way, where they're just there and it phase out. And like I said, the playful trickster part is like, I'm in your bedroom. I'm looking at you sleeping. And then
yeah,
you close your eyes. Yeah. Like, I didn't go away. Now I'm even closer, just to freak you out, because it can.
It's time to wash the sheets.
I would do. I would do the same thing. I would do that back. If yeah. I had the power, I would do that. I was like, no, I'm here. The human, the scary human, except that they would probably eat you. But yeah. You know, that is, you know, my wondering is that, are you seeing something that is not really a ghost, but has some ghost-like properties to it, this right. ethereal kind of manifestation, or even the mantis beings. You're fishing, you see a mantis creature in the middle of the river. Like, is that a ghost? Well, I don't think so. I think that's something else that just tuned into our frequency for a moment and tuned out. And they seem surprised about it. That wasn't supposed to happen, but I flicked the switch on this device I wasn't supposed to be playing with. And now I'm fishing with this guy.
Yeah. And for those of you wondering why we know so much about mantis men, you have to find episode 258 of Astonishing Legends, our main show from May of 2023. It's called Mantis Men. Go figure. Anyway, it's one of my favorite one-offs, that the yeah. weirdness of that story. It's right up there with Cisco Grove and Sam the Sandown Clown and just a lot of really strange stuff. But so anyway, love that stuff. But I agree with all the points you're making, Forrest.
Oh, well, thank you. It's funny you mentioned Sam the Sandown Clown, because I'd made a yes. note just now to mention that, because what are these things? And so, you start off with what we know, which is you see the little brother. It's like, it's my little brother. And then it's like, no, it's not my little brother. Well, now what is it? Is it a doppelganger, which we right. mentioned earlier? You know, like the reptilian, like I said, in the bedroom, is that a ghost? Well, maybe not. It could be another thing that has these properties. When the kids asked Sam, the Sandown Clown, what are you? Are you a ghost? And I love, it's one of my favorite responses of all time, because yeah. Sam yeah. says, yeah. well, sort of. And yeah. so what does that, and so what, but what does that mean? That's such a philosophical yeah. thing, is that, yeah. and I think what he's saying is that, well, I can exhibit some properties that may seem ghost-like to you, but I, you know, I'm here on a mission. I'm trying to learn about your species and your children, and you have limited ideas. And when I first thought about it, it's like, well, they didn't say, like, are you a spaceman? Because, of course, watching TV and their heads are filled with these ideas. It's like, are you an yeah. alien? Are you a spaceman? Are you a robot? They could have asked a bunch of stuff, but they asked, are you a ghost? Because for whatever reason, that's where their minds first land. It's like, okay, you're doing a lot of strange things. And I don't know, it could be cultural. It could be just that era of time. But like, if it were me, growing up in that era, I think I would have first asked, like, yeah, are you a spaceman or a robot? because he seemed robotic. But no, they said, are you a ghost? And his response was, yes, sort of. So I have these things that I can do. I can kind of phase in and phase out. You know, that's why you don't always see me. And so, yeah, I might be what you would call a ghost, or think about it. And with the reptilian, is that really a ghost? Is that something else? Is the little brother a ghost? Well, in this case, I think it's not a doppelganger so much, because again, they went to that conclusion that no, it's just another little boy, because they didn't say he looks exactly the same. When we do hear about doppelganger stories, it's less ghost-like in that it's very solid, very real looking. I always remember the one that I think we also did for one of our Halloween specials, which I would love to bring back at some point, is that they saw the sibling there, and I think it was a sister. And they're kind of goofing around, and they were speaking in their bubby language. Remember that?
Yes, that's right. Special voice.
Secrets,
yeah. Family secret voice.
Yeah, yeah, between the kids. And it's like, that's some omniscient tendency or capability that they were able to, or they observed that later on and were able to mimic it. And, you know, what's their point? Well, again, the takeaway for me was that they get it close, but it's not exact, and you can tell. So the sisters said, well, the hair wasn't the same. They had gotten a haircut like 2 weeks ago, or just did, or that hairstyle was actually from 2 weeks ago, not currently from today. So that was off. The timeline was off, but they got it close. But getting back to this case, again, it's a very classic, typical kind of tropes here, in that different people move into the house. It made me think of the Conjuring story. Remember when they were in the process of moving, and they're moving boxes in, and there was a man standing in the parlor who looked very real, and I think maybe even talked to them, and he just vanished. And like, what was that guy? Well, there's so many spirits going on in that house. I think that there was a mishmash of stuff that may not all be connected. They might be separate, independent kind of things that all live within the same space. Which is, again, that's the one of the ideas of the Sally House, is that it's kind of a grand central station of spiritual kind of beings that kind of pass in and out. And some may have a connection. Some might be bound up by a more dominant force there to do their bidding, or others might be just passing through. And so here, though, we have resident spirits. We have the old man. We have the little boy. The little boy, of course, what happens when children get together? They don't want to hang out with adults. You guys are boring. You talk about boring adult stuff. I want to hang out with the kids. And so may make their presence known more to kids. Also, adults yell at you, right? They tell you to get out of here. Stop playing. You make a better door than you do a window. Get away from the TV. Those kinds of things. So, you know, I imagine a child spirit would be more comfortable appearing in front of children and also wanting to play. That happens quite a bit. And adults, they want to do adult things and talk with other adults. So that makes sense. But I do wonder if the boy and the older man were connected. And I think if you were able to really dig back and find some solid history on this, you might find a connection with people who had lived in the house previously. And I want to know their stories. And it might be just regular people. Here's the thing. It's like, nobody's going to be interested in my personal story 100 years from now. Like, what did Forrest do? Nobody cares. It's like nobody cares, except when I become a ghost. And then people are like, oh, who, what is that figure I keep seeing roaming around? And I wish he'd put some pants on. Like, what was his story? And then you're more interesting because you're in our spirit, even though you may have led a very mundane life as I have. So it's all fascinating, but like, yeah, that'd be a great place to ghost hunt. And I wish there is a connection also to the Conjuring story. It's just the human aspect of the storytelling and the sharing of legends and tales, and that are passed down, and how different people react to it differently. I love the attitude of the woman who was there, because she was like, well, you know, no, my husband, he got work somewhere else. We're leaving. Why do you ask? Because she knew something was up. Also, they're both very cautious with each other, because they don't want to freak each other out, even though you don't have to worry about that. You're moving out. And just how they kind of carefully danced around that and then made a connection. It's like, oh, yeah, we've seen stuff too. Getting back to the Conjuring House, I always remember reading the articles about the family that moved in after the Perrone family. And so, and I just love the attitude too. It's like, well, no, we've run a daycare out of this place for like 20 years. We lived here for 30. Nothing ever weird has happened. So they weren't really speaking ill of the Perrone family. They were just like, well, nothing's really happened to us, except for the few times when the table was vibrating and it started to move a few inches on its own, and all the dishes in every cabinet were rattling. And we thought maybe there's a bus that drove by, although there's no buses that come by here. And you have your other explanations, but like you're trying to rationalize it. And maybe to that family and talking about the idea of certain spirits appearing to certain people for a reason, nothing much interested the spirits to the family that moved in after them, other than like a few, like a bit of paranormal hiccups where, yeah, things were rattled. The table, oh yeah, the table was rattling on its own. We never figured that out, but really nothing's happened. And so their attitude's much different. And also, they had a different occupation. They're with a bunch of little kids who bring their own energy. Right. And with a lot of noise or whatever, you may not notice that kind of stuff. But anyway, it's just a fascinating story. I'm glad Heather sent it in to us because it's not super dramatic, but it has a real feeling to it. And just that kind of hominess is that homes get passed down from family to family and other occupants move in and out. And they have similar experiences, which I think, one, let you know that, no, you're not totally crazy. These things do happen, and it's a part of life as much as living in homes is a part of life and shelter and comfort and safety and security. You just might have to share it with somebody.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting residential accounts we've run into because corroboration from people with no contact is about as close as witness testimony gets to evidence. But the whole thing rests on a single fact none of us can really verify, whether a name like that could have reached the next family some ordinary way or these sightings did. And that's the case for a lot of personal experiences. If the story is good enough to be told or strange enough to stick with you your whole life, a lot of times that's because of that part of it you just can't quite explain away. Well, as Forrest said, Heather, thank you for sending your story into the Astonishing Dead Letter office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.